So we are continuing our exploration of the six paramitas, and in particular now prajna, which is the sixth paramita. You've got a handout from an article that I posted, or that Michael posted thing on the webpage about from Judy Lee on the subject.
So it's under the education tab, this module 15, and it's under this class. So
Prajna 2.
Prajna.
Because you can't get enough prajna. So Michael, I don't know if any of you, some of you weren't here last week, but Michael gave a rather extensive, rather energetic description of prajna and its various aspects. So I thought I'd take a tiny step back and place the paramitas in our present lives and how we work with them, and then including prajna, and go forward with that, if that serves you all. If that sounds right. From any point of view, the six paramitas are beneficial sort of guides to how to function as a decent human being in this world. And of course, we should be generous, we should be have discipline, refrain from harm, we should go about our work joyfully, we should be able to be open, meditative, wise, and knowledgeable, and not pollute one another with the environment. And from the Hinayana perspective of individual liberation, these paramitas serve as sort of you start actually working with yourself. They start hitting you in the face if you find yourself being penurious or holding on to something, you start seeing that. It starts emerging. Your lack of generosity will start being pretty loud and clear, and your and so on and so forth, or your lack of patience. Not that any of us experience that, but on occasion, you know, folks who might.
Don't worry about me.
So the intention is fundamentally to tame our minds and our behavior so that we're not polluting our environment, and we develop some sort of tranquility. I mean, we're brought to practice meditation because we recognize this some sort of disjointed aspect in our capacity to connect with the world or working with our minds and the world, and we're ready to start working with our minds and with the practice of meditation. So in the Hinayana path, certainly the paramitas are significant. They're important. But there's still this dualistic reference of me and my generosity, and me and my patience, or even me and my lack of patience, me and my fear that I'm not going to get this gong just right. You know, there's still this sort of duality of view, that there's a me and there's a not me, and one of us is a threat to the other somehow. And Yeah, and so this is why this is a path. This is why we begin working with our discipline and our conduct. And we begin to trust that we can actually sit on a cushion, that we can not run away screaming, that we can actually experiment with letting go of some of our shit. You know, that we can actually begin to trust ourselves a little bit. We begin to tame ourselves, actually. We go from a person that we a wild person, perhaps, that we secretly think we are, but no, we don't want anybody to somebody that we fundamentally can begin to trust, and that is using the discipline, meditation, and insight start to arise. So, Prajna, does anybody not know these six paramitas? Is everybody familiar with them somewhat? Or if not, sort of, yes, maybe, sort of. Well, generosity would be the first. Discipline, which is refraining from harm. Patience, which is, as Emily so beautifully said in her talk, is the capacity to actually stay in your situation without either trying to alter it or running away from it, to witnessing your own state of mind and not running from that. That's huge. Diligence, meaning you keep at it even if you are discouraged, and you actually begin to feel a bit of inspiration and joy. You're getting it a little bit. And meditation, so you can actually sit and not be utterly distracted. You can stay and not be distracted. And then wisdom is the sixth. And as Michael said in the first class, the first five of these paramitas are are methods. If they're methods we actually work with, like you can actually practice not being stingy.
You could.
Okay. You could. You could actually experiment with being compassionate. It's a little trickier because you can end up being a real jerk. You know, sort of like, oh, you're that poor person. So sad. Which implying that you are just fine and that person is, you know, sort of, there's still a duality. I'm doing okay, that poor person, I can feel really bad for them. But the sixth paramita, prajna, it starts to change everything. That's where all the previous five paramitas start shifting from method to really a kind of a view predicated on the wisdom grounded in your experience and in your practice. In the Hinayana and path, and they discuss in this material the there's kind of ordinary prajna, let's say, that you know how to change a tire, or you know how to navigate the social security system, or you know that you've got skill, you've developed skills, you've developed know-how, you're smart, you've begun to learn how this thing works. You've got a kind of intellectual grasp, and you've also got a sort of capacity to handle yourself in the world. But when you start entering the Mahayana path, after you've achieved a certain sense of your own stability. A very extraordinary thing happens, a very naturally extraordinary thing happens, which is, having tamed yourself a bit, you look up and you notice that everybody around you is suffering in some way. And your heart begins to open. You've become a bit of somewhat less of a problem to yourself. You're starting to get out of the way a bit. And you recognize that you start having insight into seeing around you that there's so much suffering, and your heart opens naturally. And that's the beginning of the Mahayana path. It's the beginning of the Bodhisattva path, where you start cracking open that sense that I'm so messed up that I really have to fix myself before I can help I've really got to fix myself. I'm a loony and I know it. I'm a loony and there's a lot of suffering going on out there. So it starts slowly separating your attachment to yourself as the center of every story, and as though this is a kind of a contest, which you've got to win. You've got to get out of this okay. That's a huge, huge shift. And it's with prajna that this shift happens, and it's prajna when all of a sudden these paramitas start actually being transcendent. They're not mundane. They're activities based on selflessness rather than saving yourself. So it's a huge shift. They call it the mind of awakening. Bodhicitta, through working with our own experiences of suffering and confusion, and having established this little germ of loving kindness to ourselves, we know that we can actually know and have some sympathy for ourselves as faulty humans, imperfect. What a relief! What a remarkable relief. Once you start doing that, you start seeing. It's almost as though everybody around you is carrying some kind of wound, and your heart has opened. So you approach situations with compassion and insight and kindness. It starts shifting. Chögyam Trungpa describes this as the natural state of being awake, tender and genuine. And he also says it's our first taste of enlightenment. So there's this evidently jump in questions, thoughts at any time. So another phrase he uses is mind clicking in and awakening on the spot. True bodhicitta combines spaciousness, sympathy and intelligence, or shunyata, emptiness, compassion and knowledge. And this compassion is what makes it all work, and it's actually our birthright. Now, prajna itself is fundamentally the insight into how things truly are. I'm getting material for this talk from the Heart Attack Sutra, which I think was mentioned, mm-hmm. which is a great, great book, and I believe we will be using this.
We might, yeah, I think so.
By Carl Brunholzl, Brunholzl. Brunholzl.
He's German.
He's German. Little umlaut on the And also from the article that was posted by Judy Leith on the subject, which I hope you've read. And so we're going to be, I'd like to actually ask you to, I've got something I'd like you to read in there. I'll ask one of you. But from the Heart Attack Sutra, he describes Prajna as this. The insight into how things truly are, it undermines the basic notion of the relative reference points upon which we base our world, i.e., me and mine, you and yours, and the duality that sets up automatically, me and my world, out there, in here. It's threatening to our ignorance because we cannot really hide from our own intelligence, our own wisdom. We know when we're lying to ourselves. So it sobers us up. So I was watching this program, I told Emily, the other day, and this, we'll discuss this when I'm sorry guys, we're going to get back to the skandhas again. I'm just being prepared. But there's this program called Hoarders. Am I the only one here who's ever watched that? Okay. I knew I wasn't.
Hoarders.
Hoarders.
Oh, it's...
Why would you want to watch a show?
I don't... Well, let me just tell you something that I found really interesting about it. Because it's fundamentally about people suffering. And it's really about people hiding from themselves. Because there's this thing that they do that is so easy to do. They have so much space, and they fill it all with that they require things in order to know they exist, in order to feel they exist. Now, that's a whole long story. But what ends up happening is after a certain point, they no longer see their environment. They're oblivious to the destruction that they're making of their own environment. It's a willful ignorance. They don't see it. It's just the way things are. And that's what we're talking about on an exaggerated level. We're talking about willfully being ignorant of what we know is true. But what Prajna says is that you actually are fundamentally, you can't be ignorant. Fundamentally, you know when you're lying to yourself. He calls it merciless compassion that cuts through whatever is needed. So if you think of that, one of the symbols for Prajna is a double-edged sword. And it's double-edged for a number of reasons. It cuts through our own attachment, and it cuts through our sense of ourselves is solid, and our sense of the external world is solid. It is an insight and an intelligence and a wisdom that is fearless. And each one of us actually already has this. It isn't as though we're inventing this.
So is there a piece of we have it and we don't hear it? We don't listen?
Well, we are under the impression that we exist, first of all. Yeah. So
I hold ego.
We will talk about this, about egos. And that being the case, we are acting as though there is a me entirely separate from this world. And the sword of compassion, prajna, begins to cut away at that. So there's a willful, that's where there's a willful ignorance and this is a fundamental ignorance. Actually, if you would read this, somebody. Anybody willing to read? You could start from there.
We could say. Mm-hmm. And just the end of the paragraph.
And then, no, and then it will go to
next 23 pages.
I'm sorry?
Next 23 pages.
We could say that prajna is a means to sober up, which is one reason why it is not so popular. Because we usually enjoy being intoxicated by our ego trips in samsara. Prajna cuts through all our attempts at taking credit for being a good Buddhist, being on the path, or having attained something. The Prajna Paramita Sutras describe all kinds of situations on the path where bodhisattvas can get mired down. At each turn, the sutras say, you cannot really hang on to that either. No matter how good you think it is, no matter how great you think you are, no matter how fantastic an insight it may be, let go and keep moving. That's the first paragraph. That's a lot to think about. Prajna also includes the quality of compassion, but it is a somewhat merciless kind of compassion in that it cuts through wherever it is needed. It is not the type of idiot compassion that just wants us to feel better, but it cuts through what needs to be exposed or what we need to let go of. In brief, prajna questions everything that we are, everything that we think, everything that we perceive, everything that we value. Prajna is the ultimate destroyer of our value systems, which is another reason why it's not so popular. Thus, prajna cuts not only through delusion, but also through any tricky attempts by our ego to take credit for being on the path of a bodhisattva or the like. As the Prajna Paramita Sutras never tire of emphasizing, any colorful fancies of personalized spiritual attainments must be seen through and recognized to be as groundless as everything else. This spotlight quality of prajna is symbolized by the flames on the sword illuminating our blind spots. So what I was wondering too, when you were way back, you said, so with prajna and the paramitas, you're dropping your self, and now I can't remember what it was, but it just seemed to me that when you're employing the paramita, generosity, or discipline, patience, exertion, with prajna, that you're also, there's no emotional attachment to any of that. There's no judgment, for one thing. You can't be doing that.
You know. Are you referring to there's no judgment
in your part?
About yourself? Or
no, about the other.
Yeah.
There's no judgment about the other. I get this thing about, oh, I'm such a good bodhisattva, right. I'm going to do something for this.
Right.
But it's more the judgment or the emotional feel that you would have about being compassionate or disciplined.
What you mean like you're so what does compassion feel like then? I mean, it's an interesting
sometimes
question.
Emotion is caught up in a lot of it is in our ego attitudes about people. You know, I like or don't like. It could be that, or I'm neutral even. But if prajna is present, your sense of compassion for people who you don't like is not, it's not a question of don't like. In fact, you don't even realize it. I don't know how to explain it. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of interesting.
The compassion for,
well,
for everyone.
You're going beyond your own attitude.
You have to go beyond your own, yeah.
And
in order to have prajna, which in all of you can't be, your judgment and your, value judgments.
Well,
what we talked about this last week in terms of you're learning how to go beyond reference point. We talked about emptiness.
Yeah, right, we did.
Reference point is exactly what you're bringing up. All
the
emotional little associations that come up by being such a nice person and being such a sweet-hearted and profound and profoundly committed person to being on the path.
But the other person,
you're just simply, it's simply cutting through all of that. It's actually, cutting through is a really good term for prajna.
Right.
It just cuts the sword, the whole emotion of just penetrating. And so there's nobody left to look back and retrace the steps and go, oh, wasn't that nice, you know.
And also there's a sense of doing, when they said, doing what's needed. So that there's so it isn't like, I'm doing what's needed for me so that I feel okay in this situation.
Right.
Sort of your view is the view of what's needed in that situation, because you're, as Michael just said, your attachment isn't an issue. Your emotional state isn't the issue.
Isn't, or present.
It could arise. I mean, nobody's saying it doesn't happen.
Okay.
You're just not going to get, when you exercise prajna,
you're not
going to get snagged by it. Okay. It doesn't mean that you won't have those experiences.
Okay.
No, absolutely
now
not.
You're answering.
The experiences are going to arise on their own.
Right.
So, what I'm hearing is that you will still find, oh, that person's really pissing me off, or I'm really angry at that. You know, or I don't like that person.
But it arises and it dissipates without a hangover.
But you don't get...
You don't take it home with you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
You don't pack it up.
I was going to say it doesn't disappear.
Right.
Every person that appears, you go, oh, you know.
Well, it doesn't leave such a big imprint. You're learning how to actually not buy into your reactions.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you won't have reactions.
That reminds me of this great quote. I don't know who said it, about reflection upon the past. And he said, it's okay to look into the past, just don't stare.
That's great.
And that stayed with me, which is just, you're going to think about the past, and that's okay.
That's
but
really
if you really do stare at it, now you're getting hooked by it. You're ruminating and such. So, and it's kind of, I think, fits in with this, which is, those feelings are going to arise, but are you getting hooked by them? And as we talked about earlier, you're going to be afraid, but are you afraid of being afraid?
Yeah, things come up. It isn't like you don't get nervous or you don't, but there's some sense of humor. There's some sort of puncturing it where it's not thick, and there's some, you've got even insight into your own, as you were saying, your own nervousness or your own...
Your attachment to what you're feeling.
Is. You begin to know yourself,
actually.
Yeah. He was talking about on the spot, and I like that expression. It seems like when you're on the spot, you're experiencing the prajna, you're experiencing wisdom, and if you're experiencing that at the time, then you are empty of your ego. You are in that space where the wisdom is first and foremost, and your ego has fallen away, so that you can act correctly on the spot with the prajna.
Yeah.
Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we experience moments of this all the time,
mm-hmm.
and then we sort of really quickly fill it up.
Mm-hmm.
But did you just see what just happened? You know, there's that sort of
making a story out of
it,
adding
putting
on.
Putting it in context.
What's that?
You're putting it in context. Or making it more of us, like,
I can wear that one now. I had that
experience. That little Girl Scout badge.
Yeah.
Yeah, the badges.
You're right.
Want to put a label, put it in a little bento box?
No. Categorize wear it right here.
It's funny you should say
how
that.
Many did you get?
I didn't never Girl Scout.
Were you a campfire girl?
No. I was just a little Buddhist.
It's kind of like equanimity. Where does that fit into compassion? Or how is it different from it?
What do you think? What's your thought?
Well, it sounds like it's just another unfathomable characteristic of something or other.
There you go, that's Buddhism right there.
You're right.
That's totally right. That's awesome.
Let's move on. I think you just made the greatest statement. That's Buddhism. Something or other.
Good. So, moving on.
Okay.
The handout is from the Judy Leaf article. And it's just sort of taken from sort of from the article. Have any of you read that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really just like a sword, really. She just got it. So, for those of you who haven't, what you can basically, these are the thank you. There's a word there. Mahayana is referred to as the great vehicle of Buddhism because it's vast and challenging and open to everyone. The heart of the Mahayana path is compassion and wisdom, or prajna. She says in this, for the practitioner, the challenge is how to bring those two together, compassion and wisdom, which I thought was kind of an interesting statement. I don't know. I thought that was really an odd statement, actually.
Well, that's what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's
but is it's not so much a challenge. It's sort of the process. It's a process. So,
it seems natural. As you develop. Is that what you mean by challenge? It sort of unfolds rather than...
Correct.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really going to work on it to bring my compassion in.
I get compassion. It.
No, but you could also be very naturally open and responsive. Many people are. To situations that really move you.
Right.
At the same time, is there really... Are you exercising your wisdom mind?
Oh, I mean, at the same time.
So that actually there's some discernment. Remember, discernment is the key word with compassion. So you're not just running off and volunteering for every worthy cause in the universe. Because I don't know if you've noticed lately, but you get about 15 or 20 at least emails plus snail mails pleading for money, join a cause, sign this petition, call the White House, call your... I mean, you know, like, you could be all day at this, right? Because there are some very meaningful...
It's almost like watching a television program that really sucks you in, and you completely forget your mindfulness or awareness. You sort of sucked in, right? And can we be in our world without getting sucked into every emotional pit or every... seduced by every sort of dancer. So, that's interesting. So, prajna is a natural bubbling up of curiosity, doubt, and inquisitiveness. It's symbolized as the sword because the sharpness of prajna cuts at many levels. In the mundane sense, it represents sharpening of perception and inquisitiveness. So, as I said, sort of becoming skilled at being a scientist or being an artist, that's a kind of a prajna. But as we enter the spiritual path, it becomes much more rather than accepting superficial understandings, we think deeply and ask, what do I really understand? Does any of this make sense whatsoever? Prajna has this quality of creative doubt, not just accepting things based on authority or hearsay, but continually digging deeper. It cuts through, punctures all sorts of delusions and self-deception. And I think with prajna, there's a true sense of a kind of posture of inquisitiveness.
I like the line she has towards the end that says, usually we think that knowledge means having all the answers, but the quality of prajna is more like having all the questions.
Right, yeah. It's a state of being, of not knowing, or sort of know, because the sense of prajna, it isn't your wisdom. It's wisdom itself that manifests to you. It isn't a wisdom that you own and that you can then go write in a book about and then go on a lecture tour and then sell it. And in fact, our training demands that we do the opposite. That it's without credentials. That the wisdom you get, your capacity, you can leave feeling like you did the right thing, but it isn't. You don't add it up, and you don't then turn it into a credential of accomplishment. It's brutal in that way.
But also you can't really understand any of the Buddhist teachings without taking them apart and analyzing it for yourself. And that's the only time that it ever really makes sense, is when you can't just say, oh, here's the formula, or I'll memorize this, and to really understand it, because a lot of these teachings don't go through concept. They come from another place. So it's a process of really chewing on it and working with it and understanding, because you don't just say, someone said that, so I believe it.
So you've got skin in the game, actually, which is your own experience.
Right.
You constantly are bringing your own experience to it. And our teacher talked about it as, it's like gold, like finding gold in the ground. The teachings are like gold, but you have to hammer them and turn them into, you have to work with them.
You have to live them.
That's why just learning lists of, you know, lists and sublists is only, it's useful, and it certainly is, a lot of people, it's important to know, but the lists aren't the thing. Talking about prajna isn't prajna. Talking about insight, we can sort of point in the direction of what it, we can, it's like saying the color pink. What is the color pink? Well, you can use descriptives, but the experience itself is beyond description. The experience of insight and wake is beyond ownership.
I like how you have say it, self equals deception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was kind of funny.
I'm taking that home. As we go on, we're basically saying, again, it's a double-bladed sword, sharp on both sides. So when you make a stroke of prajna, it cuts two ways. When you cut through deception, you're also cutting through the ego's taking credit for it. Mm-hmm. So why do we even want to do this?
Really?
Really?
Good question.
You're left nowhere, more or less. The more mindfulness that you develop, the more powerfully the sword of prajna cuts. Once you have this sword, it cuts every possibility of escape. No one is doing this to you. It's your own intelligence. that struck me as very interesting. It's sort of like you cannot hide from your own intelligence. You know when you're on the mark and you know when you're off the mark. You know when you're... you can put on a really great face, but you know when you're BSing yourself. And this posture of inquisitiveness and awake, this is the path. This is ferocious. And it continues through every minute of your life. Once you start waking up, it's like the sun is described. The sun shines on everything. You can try to hide under a rock, but the sun is still shining. You've still got your own fierce intelligence waking you up. And all of these paramitas, it isn't sort of like, well, I've got the generosity one down. So I'm going
to check.
I'm going to go on to patience or something. You know, as practitioners, we continue meeting ourselves on the path day after day, minute by minute, because we've become open to prajna, to insight, to awareness.
So is prajna like when you sit there and you suddenly like, wow, I just was so ungenerous in the way that I shared something with someone? Is that sort of that?
Right.
That's that. Yeah, like,
insight.
You know, like just, yeah. Ooh. I only shared it with the people I like.
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, please.
So I haven't thought this through, but I'm going to throw something out, an idea. It seems to me sometimes that the more aware I get of my mind's habits, sometimes I'm pushing against that. And I feel like what's happening is that as my awareness about my mind's habits expands, the space in which I can deceive myself gets smaller. And so I find myself in a smaller and smaller room, pushing against the walls. They're getting smaller and smaller. And anxiety goes higher because you can see that your space for deceiving yourself is shrinking. And it comes from the fact that you can see out more and more windows. Is that, you with me on that? So it's like, the more you begin to see how your mind is acting, the more you're actually
it's
going to push.
Actually,
yeah, it is. But it can actually be, you can actually, in my case, experience some more anxiety for a little while because you see you can't run away from it. Not for very long.
You're shining the sun on it.
Yeah.
The sun is everywhere.
There's a
you can't hide anymore.
Right. Although you might still have some space to hide in, but being in that space, the space is getting small.
Well, that's where you're completely still involved in self-involvement.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The anxiety is simply your own habitual pattern of thinking about me.
Yeah.
It's all about me.
Yeah.
And so prajna is all about undoing that particular mythology.
Right.
I mean, it's actually just recognizing this is not about me.
Right.
So when we talk about an open question, it's not the answer, it's the question. It's just like reaching into the open, and you start discovering that that's basically the nature of your mind.
Right.
So when it's the nature of your mind, you start discovering open space.
Yeah.
And that actually is where the anxiety collapses. There's nothing to support it.
Right. But my point is that it can actually go up.
Well, that's called, there's a term for it. It's called heightened neurosis.
Yeah.
There's a real sense of you tuning in to your neurosis.
Yes.
And it's like,
holy crap.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's like the toxins kind of coming to the surface.
Yeah.
It's, well, the Vijayana would say the pus, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, there it is. No, but there it is. That's the good, juicy stuff that we get to actually see And off it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, but exactly. So yeah. It's great. Yeah. Actually, sorry.
Thank you.
Now you got
it's great
confirmation for your little room there.
Now I gotta pull the sheets back down.
That's a fun choice.
That's why it's so funny when people talk about meditation calming you down.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's always funny when I hear that, and I'm like, really? You know,
just wait.
or my acupuncturist saying, you wouldn't be so stressed if you meditated.
Oh my God!
I mean, awesome. Like a meditation. I'm like, I'm not going to punch her in the nose.
That's your patient.
That's your discipline.
That was perfect, right?
Yeah.
So, wow. I think the whole thing is to have a sense of humor and to keep your intelligence wide open and sharp. What was it? Hot. Intelligence. Hot was that phrase. Remember that phrase?
No.
Okay. Well, I can't quite either. So, I just wanted to also say, we should talk about the three prajnas of hearing, contemplating, and meditating, which is on the bottom of the second page. So the first prajna, based on being open to new information, gathering knowledge, and really trying to listen. And he says, although it's called hearing, it's like you're actually absorbing with all of your senses.
Receiving.
Reading and watching. If you ever see an extraordinary teacher, Chögyam Trungpa, how he would lift his cup. Somehow there was a whole universe of teaching in how he would move his hands or move his... But essentially the whole world is your teacher from this point of view. Mm-hmm. And the second prajna, contemplating. Once we've heard or read or experienced something, we really examine it, we chew over it. We really look at what we've learned, and what we've experienced, and we integrate it, it becomes a part of our understanding of our path. And then the third prajna, meditating. At this point, you've looked at something so thoroughly that you've actually integrated it. And the prajna of meditation means that you've actually digested the teachings. It's in your cells, and it's now part of your DNA.
And I just wanted to say something about contemplating.
Yep.
Actually, I was taking a seminar with Carl Brunholz, and I said to him, you know, we hear a lot about the hearing and meditating makes sense to me, but I don't think I've been really exposed that much to the contemplating part. And I think there are different traditions where contemplation is more emphasized, and that's something we're going to go into in the next module. We're going to do something a little different, and we'll be working more with contemplation. But I think the way that Trungpa Rinpoche taught it, it came out in the question and answer session. Because he always left a lot of space for people to ask questions. And as we do here, there's room for a lot of questioning. And that questioning from your question, then there's a contemplation of what does this mean to me? And wherever there's confusion, it's sort of laid out. So I think there's a lot of different ways to work with contemplation. And I've been contemplating that because, it seemed to me the part that was never emphasized in my own training.
Well, don't you find that the way you live your life becomes a kind of contemplation?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, that's a good point. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a formal thing. I mean, we're reflecting on interactions we've had, on something we've read, and then all day, once you sort of decide to swim in this pool, you are always wet. I mean, there's like that sense of you're always absorbing, contemplating things occurring, and you're digesting them a part of your life. So I think that's really important. That's why how you become a practitioner, actually. Mm-hmm. That is being a practitioner. It's not just...
It makes it real.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. On the cushion.
I have a question. How do the paramedics, how do they connect to prajna? Just as it's something, are those ways you can... To reach the state of prajna, or what are they, paramita?
The paramita of prajna is the sixth of them. So they're all paramitas.
Okay. Prajna is the last.
Prajna is the last one. And it becomes a kind of firing mechanism whereby.
Right, they spark each one kind of.
Yeah. And it gets more, the more you get into the Mahayana path and working with, these are sort of, this is a how-to for being a bodhisattva, right? This is sort of, they manifest in different ways throughout your life, like what patience will look like or what. But the prajna is the ignition, the insight, the vast intelligence beyond label.
So
does that make sense?
The prajna is, people always say, like, you shouldn't be self-critical, like you don't want to sit around and judge yourself. But the prajna is like the voice that just says, did you just notice what you did? Like, not, boy, what a jerk you are, what you just did, but did you see how you just did that thing?
Definitely.
As opposed to, stop doing that, that's terrible, but just, you did that.
Well, I'm really glad you said that, because that was one of the things I wanted to ask, is what's the difference between those kinds of knowing, between the knowing that says that, that wakes you up, and the...
I think one of them is just the embodiment of, there's nothing to say, you just are...
Then prajna is responsible for the real shift. Every shift is due to prajna, ignition, something, spark. That's how I sense it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking the difference is, I mean, just kindness, maitri, you know, kindness.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking the difference is kindness, maitri. I mean, the difference between beating yourself up, doing it, and just saying, oh, I did that, look at that.
Generosity to yourself.
Okay.
But it has to do with unmasking, but unmasking is not condemnation, it's simply like penetrating, seeing what's behind our little fabrications, or seeing through them. And it isn't even a lecture, you know, giving yourself a lecture or anything. You're just basically taking your attention, directing your mind. Mm-hmm. It's actually using the part of your mind that is actually capable of making that kind of perception and leaving it there. The rest of it, you don't train, when you bring anything else into it, commentary, that's it. You're, that's no longer prajna. It's beyond commentaries. That's why when we go on to the next step of this study, which will be, we're going to study the Heart Sutra. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn a lot about what that means, because we're not talking about some kind of lecture tour. We're talking about something right. Much more immediate, you know, in terms of our experience.
I was going to say that the word we haven't uttered very much tonight is the egolessness or selflessness, and prajna is predicated on that. Right? Mm-hmm. So we're about to head into those waters.
Mm-hmm.
Deep. We're going to get really wet.
Very wet.
I love the water.
Good, good, good.
What's that to be careful?
Get your scuba equipment out.
Dive on in.
We have reached the witching hour.
The witching hour.
Uh-oh.
Michael always laughs at me